Joining us now, we have the former PJ of America president and author of the book Unfriended, Power Brokers, Political Correctness, and Hypocrisy in Golf, Ted Bishop joins us. Ted, welcome into the golf shop.
Hey, Mark and Mike. Great to be with you on this Saturday morning.
Yeah, there you go. It's nice and warm here. Hopefully it's nice there.
It's really warm here, too.
Let's start out and give us the concept behind this book and why you decided to go forward with it and publish it.
Well, I think the book in general was a chance for me to share a lot of the great times that have happened to me in my golf career, but in particular during my time as a PGA officer and then the 38th president of the PGA of America in 2013 and 14. And many probably recall that I had kind of an unceremonious ending to my term when I addressed Ian Poulter as a little girl on social media after some remarks he had made about Tom Watson and Nick Faldo. And as a result, I was impeached from my position as president by the PGA of America with 29 days to go left in my term. So, you know, the first couple of chapters in the book were a chance for me to tell my side of the story, really with no filters or no media interpretation. And so I suppose to a degree there was some closure with that. But you know, the bulk of the book, like I say, is about things that were going on in golf. And I think to a degree it's almost a good capsulation of the modern history of the game right now.
Yeah, so in terms of getting it published, what kind of a process did you have to go through from start to finish to kind of roll this out and get it out for us, the public?
Well, you know, that's a great question. The timeline for this book I felt was important. I wanted to get it out in 2016. There's a lot in the book about the Ryder Cup, and I wanted to get it out before the 2016 Ryder Cup. It's also the centennial year for the PGA of America, and there's some things in there that I think are very pertinent to the history of the PGA of America. So I felt relevancy was an important thing. So it started out as a self-publishing effort, and ironically, when I got the manuscript done in late February, I took a picture of the cover of it and in a notebook and tweeted it out, and several of the major golf publications such as Golf Digest, Golf World, and Golf Magazine picked it up, and I did some interviews the next 2 or 3 days about the book, and then I got a call a few days later from Mike Beckerich, who owns Classics of Golf Publishing, and that's the publisher who did Brandel Chamblee's book, The Anatomy of Greatness, which became a New York Times bestseller. And Mike asked to see the manuscript, and I sent it to him. He read it in a day. He called me back the following day and said, you know, I find this to be a very compelling story. I think it captures golf history. It fits right in with what we do here at Classics of Golf, so we would like to publish the book. And that happened, and then, wow, within 2 months, hardbacks were out there, and the book officially went on sale June the 8th, and in the first 30 days that it was eligible to be on the Amazon new hot list on golf releases, it actually, the final 16 days it was eligible, it was number one. So it's been a kind of a whirlwind, and I'm very pleased that the reception by those who have read the book has been, you know, really positive.
Well, apparently Twitter giveth and Twitter taketh away. So I like that it was able to giveth to you with the book and get you into a good publishing situation. Now, let's take you back to those moments that really most people know about with Ian Poulter and the tweet and the response and all that, the 22 hours in Palm Beach Gardens saga. That's the jumping off point for the book. What are we going to learn from the book that maybe we didn't know coming out of the controversy?
Well, I think, first of all, as it relates to the controversy, I think that I feel like the book, to a large degree, guys, is, you know, it's an educational piece as it relates to how a major corporation or a major association like the PGA of America would handle a crisis in political correctness. And I think that's what people are going to find to be very interesting in the first couple of chapters as I go through a very detailed chronological timeline of, you know, what instructions I was given by the PGA and just ultimately, you know, where it really led to. So I think it's a case study in media relations and political correctness. And then I think kind of at the end of the book, I really look at the history of political correctness from October the 24th of 2014, when I was impeached, to present day. And this is an ever-changing landscape. And I think you saw it just this week, certainly pertaining to North Carolina and House Bill number 2 and the responses that some of the various Gulf entities had. And I think that all of the major entities are struggling right now with political correctness and how to handle it. And certainly there were various reactions to Donald Trump, and he could very well be the next president of the United States, and how all that plays out could be very interesting. But aside from all that, you know, the probably the longest chapter in the book and the middle of the book chronicles who I think some of the real power brokers in the sport are, and why I feel that they fit that role. And when you were in the seat that I was in as the president of the PGA of America, you're at that table for a couple of years, and you get to know all these people, and you really see an inside look at how the game works. And that's been some of the really interesting feedback, for example, from some of the guys that play here at my golf course who have read the book and said, you know, gee, I didn't realize there were so many different entities in golf today, and it's pretty interesting how the sport works. I didn't realize the difference between the PGA of America and the PGA Tour. So I think those are some of the things. But I think even more satisfying to me, particularly, has been the response from people that don't play golf who've read it and said, wow, this was a book that, you know, I couldn't put down. It was just one interesting story after another, whether it was the relationship with Arnold Palmer and, you know, how that was resurrected through the Deacon Palmer Award, you know, through a gamut of things. So, you know, it was a fun experience for me, and I did all the writing myself, but I had a lot of help from Dave Shedlosky, who's a veteran golf writer with Golf Digest and Golf World, who's done several books himself. Dave was my advisor. He helped me lay out the flow of the chapters, and then when I would write a chapter, I would send it to him for his input. And Dave really kept me on the path that I needed to be on, and kept the tone of the book where it needs to be. And I think it's a very fair book. I think I did a good job of presenting both sides, really, to everything I've talked about.
So what are people finding surprising about the difference between the PGA Tour and PGA of America, and where those lines are drawn and how they're managed and sort of how modern or not modern their thinking can be?
Well, I think the biggest thing they're finding surprising is the fact that they're two different organizations, and I think the average golfer in particular, or spectator who would watch tour golf on TV every week, probably would not know. I mean, I guarantee you, and I've had thousands of correspondences over the past couple of years from recreational amateurs, just people who enjoy the game based on my circumstances, and I'm always amazed at how many people refer to the PGA of America as the PGA Tour. And, you know, my simple way of explaining it is the PGA Tour players are obviously professional golfers who play the game for a living, and the PGA of America members are golf professionals who promote and teach and try to grow the game at the grassroots level. Now, what confuses all that is the fact that PGA Tour players are also members of the PGA of America. And I think probably in my time as president, the most satisfying accomplishment that I had was helping rebuild this relationship between the PGA of America and the PGA Tour. And what happened in 1968 was a very ceremonious split between tour players and the PGA of America. Up to that point in time, the PGA of America ran the PGA Tour. And led by Arnold Palmer and Jack Nicklaus and a group of players, the tour went in a different direction. And so for decades, there was a very contentious relationship between the tour and the PGA of America. I can remember when I first became an officer of the PGA of America in 2008, and it was kind of drilled into me by the leadership at that point in time that the tour was a rival, that we competed with them, that the tour's objective was to try to make the Players' Championship one of the four majors at the expense of the PGA Championship, that the President's Cup was it was their intent to make that bigger than the Ryder Cup. And in my shadowing meeting to be a member of the PGA Tour Policy Board, which the President of the PGA of America sits on, Commissioner Fincham had a one-on-one meeting with me. And he said, you know, this is a primary opportunity for our two organizations to come together. You guys are going to have new leadership. We were getting ready to bring a new CEO and Pete Bevacqua in. And he said, let's bury the hatchet. You know, let's wipe the slate clean. Let's start working together and see what we can accomplish for the good of the game and help both of our associations. And probably the first thing that happened that really made that come to fruition was when we took the stance opposing the anchored putting ban, and then after the 90-day comment period was over with, the PGA Tour fell in line with us. And that was a tremendous unification force. And I started going to the mandatory players meetings that the PGA Tour had at the bequest of the commissioner, and just one thing led to another. And tour players, I think today, have a much better appreciation and understanding, even themselves, on the role the PGA of America plays in their lives and the game.
All right, well, Ted, I want to talk Ryder Cup, but we're going to be fairly close to break. So if you'll stick around, we'll go to a break a minute or two early. And when we come back, we're going to talk Ryder Cup, okay?
Sounds good.